Community Matters, solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Hey, it's Megan from The Morning Show. Welcome to another edition of Community Matters here on Your Encouraging WPER. Today we have a couple great interviews lined up. The first one will focus on Alzheimer's and specifically some research that is being done within the community of Alzheimer's patients and also work that can be done to help identify and maybe even eventually prevent the onset of Alzheimer's symptoms. So we'll kick off with that one right here. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Could we have you start by stating your name, the organization that you're with, and also a little bit about the work that your organization does?
I'm Dr. Gab Marshall. I'm a behavioral neurologist. I work at the Center for Alzheimer's Research and Treatment at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Mass General in Boston. We have a mission of diagnosing Alzheimer's disease early, as well as treating and preventing it. We run clinical trials and observational studies for aging and Alzheimer's disease.
How prevalent exactly is the issue of Alzheimer's within our communities?
Yeah, well, so in the D.C. area, where I understand you are, there are over 8,900 seniors over the age of 65 who have Alzheimer's disease. This is an epidemic. Nationally, there are almost 6 million older adults over the age of 65 with Alzheimer's disease, and worldwide these numbers are much bigger. And so this is a major crisis.
And what is the Center for Alzheimer's Research and Treatment doing in order to help those with awareness, detection, early signs? What are some things that you guys are doing to help bring awareness to our communities?
Yeah, so our work in terms of early detection includes developing new clinical assessments that are more sensitive, either in person or remotely on smartphones, tablets, or computers, as well as using various imaging modalities, so scans of your brain to detect early biological changes in the brain. And we participate in clinical research studies that are national or international. One example of a national study that we are especially interested in sharing with individuals today is the APT web study. You can find it on aptwebstudy.org, which is a national effort funded by the NIH to study older individuals over the age of 50 who do not yet have symptoms of Alzheimer's disease but may be at risk for Alzheimer's disease. By assessing them remotely from their own homes, they can use a computer or a tablet that's connected to the internet to undergo very brief memory tests that last about 20 minutes every 3 months and track them over time to see if there is, in fact, a decline that they may not be aware of. And if so, tell them about it and tell them about research opportunities that they can participate in, either more involved studies with imaging or scans of their brain, or clinical trials trying to prevent Alzheimer's disease.
How are you able to track any sort of decline remotely?
Well, so we have a couple computerized assessments that we use in this particular study. One is a list of questions that we've honed over the years to tell us if you yourself are detecting some very subtle symptoms that you may not be aware of or may not attribute to changes that may relate to Alzheimer's disease, as well as a test battery that you can interact with on a computer, testing your memory by showing you, for example, cards with different faces and numbers on them that you would have to remember at a later time. And so these are assessments that have been validated over the years and now are being rolled out in a remote fashion like this, which is especially pertinent during the COVID-19 pandemic, where we don't, want to expose individuals for, the risk of coming into a clinic or a hospital. And so this is, in fact, a good opportunity to utilize a remote type of assessment like this.
And aside from age, 50 plus, are there any other factors that you're looking for from participants?
Well, so we don't want them to have cognitive impairment at the beginning of the study, because we want to study people at risk by age. So that's really the only requirement. And of course, they do need to have the ability to access the website. And so they need to have access to a computer or a tablet that can be connected to the internet.
So let's project ahead then several years. The web study is done. You're looking over the research results. What are you hoping you'll find? In other words, what change are you hoping that this will enact?
Thank you. Yeah, so that's an important question. So the study will go on for years. However, we will intermittently analyze the results of the study. And so one major result that we're interested in is whether or not this is, a feasible type of assessment that could be used clinically, say by your primary care physician, by a specialist like myself, neurologist, where we can track people over time, but we don't have to bring them into the clinic. We can basically have, a report of how they're doing over the year with several of these assessments in that time period. We also want this information to feed into other research studies, give an opportunity to participants in this web study to participate in other studies that may require more assessments in person, and also specifically prevention trials where we would bring them in to test an experimental drug to see if it will help prevent symptoms of Alzheimer's disease for an individual who may be at the very earliest risk point.
And regarding Alzheimer's, obviously when symptoms present themselves, then you're already dealing with someone who is in the state of decline. But when does this actually develop in a person? I understand that it's before the onset of symptoms.
Yeah, well, so we know about biological changes in the brain more than a decade, some would say 2 decades before you have significant symptoms. You can have, very mild symptoms that may last several years before you hit the stage of dementia where you have significant decline in your daily functioning. And so the advantage of a study like this, the APT web study, is that we may in fact detect very subtle changes in your memory before you're aware of them, because we compare you to yourself. We have different time points of how you perform on these standardized validated assessments, and we can see if there is in fact a decline before it really affects your daily routine.
Going beyond the scope of your study, just to reach a wider portion of our audience here, what are some things that we can be on the lookout for as caregivers, as family members, that may be an indication of developing Alzheimer's symptoms that we should be on the lookout for to kind of be like, all right, we need to get this looked at. We need to look into this a little bit more closely.
Sure. Yeah, that's an important question. And so so what we focus on are consistent changes in short-term memory as an early symptom. So difficulties remembering names, difficulties remembering recent events or conversations, misplacing things. But the key here is that they're consistent. It's not that it happens once a week or every month or so, but rather is a usually daily occurrence. We also look for early difficulties finding words when you're talking, searching for the right word. We look for difficulties with sense of direction. Say you're driving out of your neighborhood and you're getting lost. We look for some procedural memory difficulties. You forget how to operate certain appliances or say the remote control. Those are early cognitive symptoms. They're often accompanied by early mood symptoms, such as mild depressive symptoms, lack of motivation, anxiety, irritability. And the key is that there are change from your prior abilities or a change from your prior mood. These are new things. These are not things that you've had since you were young in your 20s or 30s.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Marshall. For our next interview, we are going to be shifting our focus now over to the healthcare community and specifically focusing on an initiative that is really helping nurses who, whether they're on the front lines or just in the healthcare community at large, ways that they can help improve their stress situation during this, some resources for them to help them through. So good morning. Welcome to the program. If you could start by stating your name, the organization that you're with, and a little bit about what your organization does, that would be great.
Well, my name is Kate Judge, and I'm the executive director of the American Nurses Foundation. And we are the philanthropic arm of the American Nurses Association. And our job really is to ensure the health and well-being of nurses so that nurses can ensure the health and well-being of all the rest of us.
Amazing. Now, as a nurse's daughter myself, I am very, this topic is very near and dear to my heart. So what does the foundation do to help nurses, especially in a time like this? Like, let's take first a look at normal times. What does your foundation do to help nurses get through to the day to day?
Well, before the pandemic, we really have an agenda of helping nurses in several ways. One of them relates directly to our work in the pandemic. So we have been supporting something called Healthy Nurse, Healthy Nation, believing that if you can support the 4 million nurses in America, you can truly change public health overall, because one out of 100 people in the United States is a registered nurse. And nurses before the pandemic were less healthy under extraordinary stress. And so that's somewhere that we've put a lot of energy and we believe made a big difference. We've also supported research and scholarship, education, and ways that nurses can practice to the full extent of their ability, bring all their knowledge and wisdom into the care environment, and really transform care for all the rest of us.
And now that we're in this pandemic, how would you say that those stresses have grown? Even the importance, I guess, of self-care and, you know, they're taking care of their own mental health.
Well, the increased stress, the sense of not being safe, sometimes in a work environment, has caused incredible trauma and pressure on nurses, something that no one should have to face. They shouldn't have to worry about whether they are putting their own lives at risk, and even more importantly for so many nurses, whether they're putting their families' lives at risk. So the patient volume, what they've been seeing, the isolation of patients from their families, all of this has added to incredible stress and really trauma for nurses today. And whether a nurse is practicing in the emergency room or providing care in the ICU or in a maternity ward or in a primary care clinic, they've all been affected by this pandemic. They have watched friends, family be ill, perhaps die. And this is very, very personal. And we are concerned that if we don't have nurses at the heart of healthcare, we won't have a healthcare system at all.
So talk to me about then the well-being initiative. What impact do you hope that this will have on our healthcare community?
Well, our well-being initiative is truly designed for nurses by nurses. It's an authentic, varied approach to rebuilding resiliency, rebuilding nurses who are at the heart of healthcare. And we have a number of tools that range from writing and journal therapy. We know that that makes a difference. Peer-to-peer support and talking one-on-one. We have a variety of tools. They're all free, and they're for nurses, again, who consider themselves on the front line, but really all nurses. Nurses today are under tremendous stress, and we all can help them by encouraging them to take time for themselves and to put their own well-being right at the top.
So when you say that this was developed for nurses by nurses, can you unpack that a little bit?
It is peer-to-peer. So we've worked with emergency room nurses. We've worked with psych mental health nurses. We've worked with critical care nurses. And of course, we've worked with our great partners at the American Nurses Association, looking at what are the best and specific ways that we know we can make a difference in nurses' well-being. So we went to the best research, we went to the best clinical outcomes, and we said that's what we want for nurses today. And that's what we've built in the well-being initiative.
What would you say for members of the community who are not in the healthcare community? How can they support those who are working in healthcare, those nurses who, whether or not they feel that they're on the front line, how can we support them?
Well, how we can support nurses really comes down to three things. One, we can do everything that we can do in our power to stay well, to stay out of hospitals. That's the first thing. The second thing is we can tell those nurses in our lives, whether they are nurses in our community of worship, whether they're nurses in our children's school, or they're nurses in our family, they're nurses in our that live on our block. We can say, how are you? We appreciate you. And are you doing enough to take care of yourself? And truly point them to these resources that we have. And third, of course, it's supporting the work that we're doing to support this. And so encouraging people to either go to our website, givetonursing.org, and make a contribution, or to easily text the word CARE to 20222 and make a one-time $25 contribution. Each of those are ways that you can truly help nurses, all nurses today.
I love that. I love that a whole lot. Going back to the initiative, just for a quick second, how long has this been in place? I know that like the verbiage that I have is that it's been launched. Do you have any success stories already from people being involved in this program?
This program launched several weeks ago. We knew right away, starting in April, that we were going to need to build something special for nurses. And the feedback that we've received has been truly heartening. As one nurse said in the first peer-to-peer conversation, she said, "This is coming at exactly the right time with exactly the right support I need." We've heard things like, this is a completely safe environment and I really feel I can be myself. We've had people say that this is a space where they can explore the issues. Again, not just the issues that they face in a clinical setting, but how they're balancing their life. So we're getting a lot of great feedback, and our mission really is to make sure that all nurses, all 4 million nurses, know about this initiative and the other work that we're doing to support nurses. We, in our Coronavirus Response Fund for Nurses, are also providing direct financial assistance to nurses. We've given away almost $2 million in that way. We're providing education and other tools. So there's so much that people can access if they go to nursingworld.org.
Excellent. Thank you. And I was actually just going to ask that, but I think that you just answered it. So for people who are interested in learning more then about the initiatives and just all the work that the American Nurses Foundation is doing, can you repeat that website for me?
Sure. For people who want to help and want to point nurses to this set of tools that we have, or nurses who are listeners, they can go to nursingworld.org.
And then just one last personal note, if you wouldn't mind, for those who are listening right now who are in the healthcare community, what do you want to say to them?
I can't thank those in the healthcare community, all those healthcare providers, all those critical support staff for what they do, for the braveness of what they have done every day, truly before the pandemic, but most especially in the pandemic. So I can't be more thankful for what they do and more committed to supporting them on the other side of this pandemic.
Great. Well, thank you, Kate, again for your time today. I appreciate all the work that you're doing, and I know that it's going to benefit so many. If you would like to hear this interview again or share it with your friends, don't forget that you can do that. The links are right on our website, WPER.org. Just find Community Matters, and you'll be able to listen back to this as well as all of our previous programs. And again, thank you for listening to Community Matters on your encouraging WPER.